take these twists and turns, man, I don't blame you.
I said, well,
I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere.
You know, as we know, the music's like fading out. Cole was, I think, thanking us for coming on. But Cole, you're actually doing us a huge solid, because it was going to be just me and Nathan, and we would have to pay people to listen to that. So you're definitely whatever metaphor we want to use. You know, you're the special sauce that's holding the sandwich together. You're the mortar between the bricks. So thank you so much.
You're the caviar on the bread, as we say here in Sweden.
I'm going to guess in Sweden that's a little more working class and a less bougie than it sounds.
Head curtains,
yeah.
That's awesome.
I almost want to get my little tube of caviar. It's super inexpensive and it's super bad. I don't think they're even allowed to call it caviar. I think they call it roe.
Oh, well, yes.
But yeah, no, it's very working class. It's called kalas.
How long are you there for?
I've been living here for about 2.5 years.
You live? Oh my god! Oh my gosh! You live in Sweden. That's my fault. Oh wow, that's awesome.
I'm coming back. I'm coming back in March, though. So,
okay, nice.
Or as I like to say, not soon enough. So yeah, excellent. So welcome to Barnstorming. We're gonna start a little bit different. I'm gonna read you all a quote, and if you know who it's from, please don't say. I'll reveal later.
But is it from one of us?
No. Choose your leaders with wisdom and forethought. To be led by a coward is to be controlled by all that the coward fears. To be led by a fool is to be led by the opportunists who control the fool. To be led by a thief is to offer up your most precious treasures to be stolen. To be led by a liar is to ask to be lied to. To be led by a tyrant is to sell yourself and those you love into slavery.
You know who that it sounds like exactly?
Okay, you can guess, but...
Ted Cruz on Twitter.
I was just about to say that.
Oh, I was going a different direction with it. I was going to say, like, I mean, you said not to guess, but it's so obviously Trump that it's like, why even pretend we don't know?
This is going to be fascinating. So if you're just tuning in, thank you for joining us. Wait for later in the show for the reveal, because we're going to have some fun with this Easter egg when we crack it open and eat the yolk. I don't know. I'm Jordy Comas, sometimes known as the master of metaphors, facilitator for Barnstorming PA. And I'm going to introduce my co-host today. First is a man I like to think of as the upright version of the Batman utility belt, because he has so many skills that you don't even know what they are. Nathan Lund, go ahead and say hi and tell us about yourself.
Oh, hi, I'm Nathan Lund. I like to think of myself as the mistress of metaphors, so not quite on Jordy's level, but you know, I'm just trying my best. I'm really trying to put the thing that does the screwing inside the screw so that we can fix the thing. That's an example of my metaphors. I'm a political consultant in Harrisburg, and I guess, are you going to introduce everybody, Jordy? I know you said you're messing around with the format, so
yeah.
I got
a next one, and I love that. I will accept that as your application, and I'm going to put a stamp of approval on the mistress of metaphor, because you are good at it, and you snuck in some sexual double entendre, which reminds me of one of my favorite jokes. Woman went into a bar and asked for a double entendre, and the bartender gave her one.
Oh.
If you don't get that, I'm going to go on a limb. If you don't get that, you don't deserve to listen to this podcast. Next up is Taylor, who is definitely on the top 95 list of Americans in Scandinavia. Take it away, Taylor.
Pleasure to be here. They also call me their Spielmeister, the game person. I come up with all the games.
Now, see, if you translate it, you're really, you know, that's no fun for the German listening audience that we know we have so much of.
That's true. We do have a vibrant German language.
Well, you and Sam are keep teasing that you're going to do a German language.
The Deutsche Sprechige Ausgabe, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And a little bit more about you?
Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, I am a, I just do politics, and I'm a, just got my master's of disaster risk management and climate change adaptation here in Sweden and am looking for work. And I'm I haven't been on in a while actually. But I've been a little bit behind the scenes, and it's a pleasure to be on today. I'm actually skipping something that I should be at to do this. So it's a pleasure.
So no, that's true, but not a little bit. Taylor and I are the co-producers, and we're putting a lot of work behind the scenes. So there's going to be more goodness coming out of that. Last, but so far beyond least, that he's most, if that makes sense. Returning champion, Cole Goodman, who also, as it turns out, is today winning the Miami Vice costume contest. He looks just like Tubbs from Miami Vice, the real original version in the 80s. Take it away, Cole.
It is a pleasure to be on. I guess on the show, I would love to be known as the high-end escort of metaphors. like Nathan, political consultant in the Harrisburg region. And it's just a pleasure to be on. I love all you guys. I really do.
Well, you guys have, in all trying to niche yourselves, have niched me into the person that will not use a metaphor. Listening to me will be like listening to I don't know. I'm not good at it, actually.
If I'm the master and Taylor's the mistress and Cole is the high-end escort.
No. Nathan's the mistress of
mistress, yes. And Cole is the high-end escort. I think, you know, and I'm saying this purely fairly, just judging by your metaphor work, I think you're the middle school boy asking a girl to dance of metaphors.
I was going to say just the, I don't know.
Like, I'll accept that.
But I don't ever really try. So, I mean,
exactly.
Okay. I think my, if I had to give you a title based on what you were going to contribute to the metaphor, I think you're more like a sommelier of similes than a metaphorical person. Cause you're more of a, you're using like the likes.
The likes and the asses. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
That's more you, because you're like, I'm not going to call something it isn't, right? We're not doing metaphors.
Shame on me.
That's good, Nathan.
This is, yes, Nathan, well done. And I think clearly you get an A+ in alliteration. We're going to stop with the word games for a little while, because this will rapidly go down.
What are we doing this show, Jordy?
What are we doing? So aside from the mystery quote, which we'll go back to, we're also going to do, I'm going to mention briefly an event that happened last night that the Hub for Progress did, which was the Outrun Coalition. And Nathan may have seen some of that. I'm not sure. We'll do some show announcements and housekeeping. We're going to do our headline activity, which been a pretty regular feature here, where we all do a headline from the week. Oh, somebody should probably warn Cole about that while I'm talking, give him a chance to think of something. And then we're going to play a game. I'm not sure if it has a name. I know it's been done. It's going to be very interesting. And then we're going to do something we did similar recently.
Values quiz.
The social values quiz. Thank you. Thank you, Taylor. And then we're going to listen to Malcolm Kenyatta, who's a PA representative in our PA General Assembly from the Philly area, right? Somewhere, who has also thrown his hat into the ring for the Senate race in PA in 2022, which is an open seat for people who don't follow politics as closely as some of us. Senator Toomey is retiring, which, on a sidebar, I will note that being a retiring senator definitely seems to be a miracle cure for growing a spine. So if you have a kind of spinal injury, rather than wait for science to catch
up, run for Senate,
retire, you'll grow a spine. It's amazing. So Malcolm King, so John Fetterman did his ad, and we all watched it, and we did our own sort of hot takes or sort of second takes. We're going to do the same thing with Malcolm Kenyatta's ad. I know I haven't seen it. So that's going to be interesting. And then somewhere in there, I need to tell you all about the quote, and we'll talk about that. So that's a bit of the outline for the show today. I see. Yeah, go ahead.
I guess first, we should just say, if you like this show, review us on Apple Podcast, Google Play,
wherever you're
Spotify. Listening. Yeah, however you're listening to this, however you found us.
Yep.
Like and share our content on social media, and fill out the listener survey so we can know our audience better, and call your mother today.
Well, also something I wanted to do now, Taylor, that is share a little bit of feedback we got. Now, I will say this is from a friend of mine from high school, who's Adam King, who's also a professional sound person. He does the sound most recently for Fargo, the TV show. So it's a little bit focused on me, but it's, it, you know, I think it's nice to share like what we're doing well. This is from Adam. I listened to the COVID Karen discussion and found it truly fascinating and informative. Ernie's, that's our other friend, is absolutely right. You're a natural at this. You're engaging and able to conduct a complex discussion fluidly. You ask challenging questions to dig deeper into your guest expertise. This is crazy. I shouldn't be reading this. You're intelligent and witty. All, I love this. With your rich, husky, bear-like, relaxed, come with a beer, come have a beer with me voice. but he did have some good feedback. I do think a greater sense of structure before delving into the conversation would be useful. I love the free-flowing, spontaneous nature of the conversation, so I don't think you want to over-borscht it through too extensive an editorial process. I didn't know if overborscht was an LA term that of art that like I just wasn't privy to. That was a typo.
I was thinking it would be like don't overthink it, like don't ferment it like you would a good borscht.
Is borscht fermented?
I don't know.
I didn't. I don't.
That's think just it what is. I was thinking.
Oh no, it was overthink.
Here's another review.
Yeah.
Just finished listening to the Barnstorming PA with Nick Presley. He is most impressive. I agree with you, Taylor and Dwayne, about Fetterman's ad. It made me want to adjust the brightness on my screen.
Yeah, definitely. I guess you've seen the ad, Cole.
Yeah, and that's so true. My gosh. I had to turn full brightness up. I was like, man, I can't see it.
If you want to turn brightness up, you have to elect him. That's the thing.
I had to turn my sunlight on that I use in the winter.
I mean, it's interesting because I've seen a little bit on social media and some other places of people like lauding him. And it's for sure that the Fetterman train is got a lot of steam, I think, in national and sort of Democratic insider circles and, you know, people like his brand. And so they kind of looked past that, but you know, for people who hadn't had a chance to listen, or for Cole, Dwayne started it, and I think all of us agreed that it had such dark undertones and was very like, you know, things are really awful, and not quite on brand for. And most of us are supportive of him generally, maybe not in this race, but we think he's a good politician. Yeah,
yeah, and I have to say, like, if you look on YouTube, it didn't actually get that many views, like 12,000 or something like that. And I think part of that is like, it didn't give me a good feeling. And I feel like things like that, you know, sometimes you watch them twice or three times, email them to somebody, you know, I don't know. I wonder what they think about it. But if I were their political consultant, I wouldn't be very happy.
So, and I know that y'all probably, all of you rehash this, but I've already seen the Fetterman ad. And if I could give my 30-second hot take, I would love to.
Please,
go ahead.
I think that there are many places in Pennsylvania that are struggling, but there are also many beautiful places throughout Pennsylvania. And I understand in your ad, if you want to focus, you know, and highlight the places that are struggling. Like he talks about Braddock a lot. There are places even in our own county, Nathan, like Steelton and Williamstown up north that are really struggling. But when I like ended, I didn't feel hopeful. Like I didn't feel like this is someone that, it, you know, is going to go to the U.S. Senate and not just fight for the struggling places of our state, but also really, you know, representing the beauty of our state as well and what's great about Pennsylvania. So the dark undertones, definitely saw that. I don't think it was like a bad ad. Let me be clear. I thought it was very well done, very well produced, but it was just, it just left me feeling sad, you know, and I think the best candidates can like take an issue and shine light on it, but also instill hope in people, you know, instill a sense of we can make this better, you know? So that's just my hot take on it.
Yeah. And actually just on that point, I think if you're going to be negative, you have to be explicit about the villain, because if otherwise it serves no purpose. If you're just negative for the sake of being negative to tell people that life isn't great right now, then you either have to pivot to how you're going to make it better or the people who are making it bad. And that's right. It. That's my
question. Right.
Should we do headlines?
For sure. Well, actually we sort of,
do you want to read something else about yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was definitely a love song to Jordy. And I got to say, Adam is just that generous. Once he gets to know any of you guys, he would say such nice, lovely things about you. But I do live with two 17-year-old teenagers who are also my offspring, who spend most of their day crushing my ego. So I take whatever praise I can get wherever it comes from. just a couple more things. We'll put in the show notes about our listener feedback survey. I think you mentioned it, Taylor, but I just wanted to underscore that again. We are going to have some merch coming. So, start putting your quarters in your piggy bank. We've been reaching out to other podcasts.
Be union made in the US. So.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, there's one of them right now. Cole Goodman has his own podcast, which is, I believe, called The Cedra Room.
There we go. Yep.
Cedra Room. And do you have any new episodes up recently? I know you focus on people who are running.
Yep. We're probably going to come back in the general election of this year when we have our nominees. I'm not looking to, get into these primary fights and such. So, we're going to come back in the general to educate people on our candidates, Republican and Democrat, just so people can understand who's running.
Right. Excellent. I know Alcoholics is a really great show with Terrain Myricks and his wife, Katrina. I hope I said that right. Terrain, right?
Yeah.
Terrain. Yeah. He said, I get to come on. And Joey Ola, who does a more of a video podcast, he's whip smart poli sci student at I think Elizabethtown. He's really excited to talk about the Senate race. And the other thing is, we're very aware that this has been a very male heavy rotation recently. So we're definitely, and if you're listening and you think you'd like to join us, reach out, but we know we have Katie Bloom, who's going to come on in March. And we're looking for some other, women or, however you define
to talk about to talk about the PA budget.
That'll yeah. be great. Cause she works with, conservation voters of PA and she's yeah. cool. I love her. She used to be, the van person for the PA Dems. So I had to go to her and annoy her a lot and, oh, she's so well suited to what she's doing now. Oh, I love her. I didn't even know she was going to be on. So I'm excited.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show.
Definitely. She's also the kind of person, I'm going to say, who definitely also has a come have a beer with me voice and demeanor. And she happens to live in Milheim, where there's a great brewery, the Milheim, what is it called? Ale House? Tap House? Elk Creek Brewery in Milheim. Definitely, we should, once we get their name right, they can pay us to be a patron. All right, so that's the show notes. Sorry about all of that. Sorry, one last thing. Up Now is the first installment of a new series we're doing, which is a slightly different format. It's Black Voices Matter, Stories from the Rural Uprising. This is a project where we're going and we're talking to as many people as we can who were either renewed in terms of their activism and community leadership or newly politicized and engaged because of the George Floyd murder and the Black Lives Matter uprising. The first one was with KJ Williams. We scheduled 45 minutes. It was so interesting. We're going to do a part two, but that's up. KJ is a really endearing and charismatic young man, 20 something from Milton, who with some, what he always calls them, his brothers, started If Not Us Then Who, which brought record crowds and did a whole series of really important events last summer and into the fall. So that's out on
March. And this winter too, they did a coat drive recently.
They did a coat drive, yeah. And that's part of the conversation. I mean, since I brought this up, the goals of this are to do some oral history, to talk about what's going on and what's next, that linking of street power to political power, to community or other kinds of impacts. And it's also about collaborative movement learning. The conversations we're doing, the one I had, Nathan and I had with KJ, is about, and this comes from some of what we do with the Hub for Progress, you know, what are the stages of a social movement? It is a long haul, or it's a marathon of sprints, or however you want to think about it. So that's what all of that is. Okay. Thank you for sticking with all of that sort of show notes. So headlines. The way we're going to do this is we'll each share our headlines. And then I think what we're going to do is, if you've got a quick reaction, go ahead and do that after the headline. And then we'll come back and we'll just kind of let the conversation go where it goes. I'll go first, and then we'll do Nathan, Taylor, and Cole. So mine is this: prairie fire of support for Wolf's education budget proposal to
support. Oh my God, I thought they were supposed to be five words or less.
No.
It's a headline, Jordy.
I'm from the New York Times of headline writing, which are often a bit long.
Jordy doesn't do a headline.
Jordy does. Jordy does byline.
Listen, I'm a former professor. I'm used to long titles. Prairie fire support for Wolf's education budget proposal to support not erode K-12 schools.
And then do you have a colon second part? Or
No. I edited that out.
Okay.
So did you actually hear it in between?
No, I didn't. I wasn't paying attention. I was just waiting to make that joke. Yeah. What was it again?
Prairie fire of support for Wolf's education budget proposal to support, not erode K-12 schools.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Mine is on topic for what we're going to discuss later. And it's Black, gay, and candidate for U.S. Senate. And that's obviously about the Malcolm Kenyatta race, entering the race.
Not Fetterman?
No, not about him. Although there could be a couple scoops in there.
Mine is relieved but engaged.
Okay, listen. What the hell?
That's a teaser.
Who knows what that's about? I mean, that could be about my bathroom experiences.
You'd have to read the article.
Would there be a picture attached to this article?
Wayne is going to hate this when he hears it.
If there's a picture, it would be like Joe Biden reading a policy brief
on the toilet. Got it. Cole.
I promise I will come better prepared next time. But my, you know,
that,
my,
given that my we called you 5 minutes before we started recording, I think you're all good.
My headline actually is going to have to do with my attire, and I'm going to call it Ted Cruz, Cancun, Angry Orchard. I'm going with them.
Paul Goodman has endorsed Ted Cruz for his next.
No.
Known. You're going to get kicked off state committee. All right.
Give the guy a break. He just wants some sun.
Right. I need a tan. So.
There were some great memes. One I saw was Flying Ted,
mm-hmm.
picking up off of Trump's. Trump was a and by the way, Trump's nicknames were so horrible. I know I've said this before in the podcast, but like George W. Bush, who I did not admire for hardly anything, he at least was good at nicknames.
Turd Blossom.
Turd Blossom. Carl Rove. That's Carl Rove. Carl Rove was called Turd Blossom, which is just genius level nicknaming. The other one I saw about Ted Cruz was something like a picture of him, and it was like, man crosses border, travels 1,200 miles to provide shelter, electricity, and security for his family, or something like that. I was like, that's really very on point. Can I say a little bit more about mine?
Go into your headline. I'm curious about this prairie fire.
Yes. So this was sort of vaguely aspirational, but this guy Matt, you guys might know how to pronounce his last name, Matt Bruyette, I think.
Yeah. Yep. That's it.
Yeah. So he published an op-ed in the paper that serves our area, the Daily Item, and it was like, let's do right by the kids. And Matt Bruyette, for people who don't know, and I don't know a lot about him, you all might know more, but I know he either founded or was one of the principals at Commonwealth Foundation, which is the dark money hub of all of the really bad neoliberal, even more than neoliberal. I don't quite mean the neoliberal. Sorry, let me take that back. All the really bad right-wing economic conservative policies, but especially the ones that are bright and shiny in the surface and are really about undoing everything that's good about real commonwealth economics, by which I mean making commonwealth, and anything that would be close to democratic socialism. So anyway, he wrote this op-ed in which he you know, because there is no crisis that crisis capitalism won't take advantage of. He said, in support of privatizing schools using charters, these students often found this opportunity in public charter schools and private schools, which saw enrollments increase during the pandemic. So basically saying the pandemic is a good argument to do even more. I don't like to say charter schools. I just came into this, but like, it's really privatizing schools through charters as a Trojan horse. And we can get into this some other time, but I think that there's something to be said for building in more bureaucratic innovation and flexibility in the K-12 system. And more than 20 years ago, I could see charters as a way to do that. In general, especially in PA, I don't see them as anything other than a way to generate guaranteed revenue streams for private corporations. So the Prairie Fire support, I realize I'm talking probably longer about this than we should our usual headlines, but I wanted to highlight this. So this guy Bruyette wrote this op-ed in the Daily Item, and I reached out to local progressives and smart people I know, and I got two people who were interested in writing responses. One of them, Abe Feuerstein, wrote a response, but this is one of the things that is I want to improve about rural progressives. You know, he wrote this and he sent it to our paper, and he's not aware that Bruyette and that whole right-wing noise machine, they will publish that same piece across all kinds of small town newspapers. And so they distribute this message. And you know, it is very cunning and conniving, right, to link the problems with schools and pandemics to an argument for charter schools. And you know, Abe, who I love, he's a good friend, wrote a great piece. But, you know, in his mind, it was like, I'm answering this in my local paper. And we don't have that, as far as I know, on the left. What I wanted to have happen, and maybe still can, is like, the PA education voters, or whatever that organization is, or other people could take Abe's thing and then get it in all these papers. And I did a little bit of searching, and I found 5 outlets in the last 2 weeks where Bruyette published that. One was Trib Live, one was my newspaper, one was an op-ed, like a television station had op-eds that were published. Another was a blog, almost word for word.
I'm going to interject here. I think that something that we talked about on 2 podcasts ago with Chuck Black, Christian Lujinski, and Chris Benson, it was on building democratic capacity in rural areas, was the need to have, instead of just having county parties and state committees, having intermediary democratic committees, like for congressional districts and stuff like that. I think that would be kind of like a perfect thing that they could do, like have just more of like a regional approach to publishing op-eds and responding to this right-wing noise.
In Luzerne County and also in Dauphin, they're also regionalized under the county party, to where there are different regions that are defined by state house boundaries. So there is that intermediary level that exists. Because when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, this does exist in some counties. And in Dauphin, we're also organized the same way, to where you have your precinct committee people, and then those kind of are organized into their state house districts. So then those people can kind of coordinate on that level. And then they also are obviously active on the county level too. So those things do exist, and it would be nice to have that PA wide. That'd be really great. Also, I just have to say, I wasn't on that episode, but if you haven't listened to that one, you really should. It's going to be the only episode of Barnstorming that I think I've listened to more than once. So I'm excited
about it. Which one is that?
That's the one that Taylor just plugged. The one about the building the party infrastructure.
Oh, yes. I just want to read 2 sentences, if I can, from Abe's. So this was Abe Feuerstein's response. And I realize I've used up more than my time, but I want to get what Abe put out here. And it is counter to what, because I read Bruyette's. Charters, this is Abe's words, charter schools have a notorious track record of waste, fraud, and mismanagement of public funds. Recently, reporters from the Scranton Times Tribune found that one online charter school in Pennsylvania spent as much as $1,000 per pupil in advertising. And, you know, it's going to vary across districts, but probably PA districts spend anywhere from $7,000 to $10,000 per pupil. So that is a huge proportion of your revenue. And we can do another episode on this, but like, privatization, I'll say, sometimes can be an effective policy tool, but like 9 times out of 10, and we just saw this in Texas, right? One of the reasons Texas had these huge problems was because they over relied on privatization without proper regulation or oversight. And so they have a grid that stayed disconnected from the rest of the national grid precisely because they're like afraid of the evils of regulation.
Yeah. I think I'm going to pull the soapbox out from under you so we can wrap up this segment. Nathan, do you want to talk about Malcolm Kenyatta or should we wait until we listen to the ad?
Well, I think we all want to hear about Relieved But Engaged.
Yeah, I kind of want to hear about that one too. I think mine is really just a lead in to what we're going to talk about later. I did have one last thing actually on Jordy's because I don't think we've
spent
time on his headline, but it's only because he tied it into to Matt Briette. And I think part of the reason that he's very vocal and very omnipresent right now, again, is because back in 2019, leading into 2020, he was running for the Republican nomination for the 48th district, which was a seat that was vacated when Senator Fulmer was caught with child pornography and he was ousted from office. Shocking that he was a Republican. And then the person who took his place, Dave Arnold, he actually died a couple months ago because he had brain cancer while he was running for office and then he passed away. So I'm expecting that Matt is going to probably run for the 48th again. He'd be looking to get his party nomination. So, yeah, and we do have some Democratic candidates in that race as well, including Laura Quick, who is a former congressional candidate who's running for that. And I think there are a couple others as well. So just kind of putting that out there.
So Relieved But Engaged is basically just saying, I'm so relieved that the rule of law still exists in the US and that I'm so relieved that the Trump administration is over. And I'm hoping I'm still engaged and I'm hoping that other people still are engaged in politics. And what we saw in the Trump administration with this resurgence of people interested in politics doesn't just subside with the Biden administration now that things are calmer. Mm-hmm. Cole, I would love to hear about your Ted Cruz headline.
I am trying to picture Cole and Ted Cruz on a vacation.
But it has to be, and I got to show, I have the full jumpsuit on.
Oh, my God!
That has to go in the show notes.
I'm ready to hop the plane with Ted. But in seriousness, it was very interesting because I have a few friends who live in Texas and they're Republicans and they were messaging me like, what the hell? We actually not necessarily like Ted Cruz, but we're like, you know, we're Republicans, we'll vote for him. But they were like, after this, I will never vote for him again. Just abandoning his state and then trying to blame it on his daughters. That was the crazy thing about it. So, and I know, as Jordy mentioned, all the memes happened and such. But this is actually, I think, a really sick, serious moment in Texas history, because if there is another candidate like Beto, I think that, you know, it should be a prime target for national Democrats and Democrats all over the country to really support whomever gets that nomination, because Ted Cruz is losing it, but the whole Republican Party is losing it. So that, you know,
I'm curious, Cole, it's no secret that Ted Cruz is probably trying to run for president in 4 years. Do you think that this affects, do you think this completely shot his chances? Or do you think, just as a political consultant, do you think this has enough legs to make it to last it that long?
That's a great question. I think it definitely hurts him. And I definitely think it's going to be brought up. What will be interesting if he does, God forbid he does not, if Trump were to try to run in 2024, if he's not barred from running for office again, on that debate stage, you know he's going to bring it up. And I think other Republican candidates will too. Are you going to do the same thing if the United States is under attack, whether it's by weather, whether it's by, domestic or foreign enemies? Are you going to run away? And I think they could really brand that with Ted Cruz. And I, so I don't, if I was in the cruise camp, I'd be like, dang, what? I don't know how we combat that. Cause they've done a real, piss poor job at it so far, in my opinion.
Oh, it's so obvious what you pivot to. You just say that you want everyone to have the same level of prosperity to where they can escape to Cancun when they're same stuff. And what you need to do is deregulate industry. So then that way the government gets off of our necks. So everybody can be billionaires because that's the goal.
I forget if there was, I mean, I remember there was some attack ad that either either Obama ran it against Hillary or Hillary ran it against Obama in 2008. About like the midnight telephone going off.
It was Clinton against Obama.
Yeah, I can just see some like very humorous parody about, you know, like phone rings for Ted Cruz and then it shifts to like the beach, you know, or something like that. I don't know. There's something that you can do.
Looks like
with
a
that.
Corona ad.
Yeah, right. Yep.
So as the least, I see myself as less of like a political, you know, insiders, the three of you all. The thing that strikes me about Cruz is, you know, the little bit I know about him is that he's so universally disliked by like colleagues in government, how this just happened. I don't understand. I mean, he must be very good at something like running in Texas because he's won at least twice.
Could I comment on that? Because half of my family is from Texas. My dad's from Texas. My grandpa, who unfortunately passed away last year, he was from Texas, hardcore Republican. I mean, just hardcore. Not a Trumper, which very interesting, but a hardcore Republican, I need to vote. And I had that conversation with him. I was like, look, as a Republican voter in Texas, what draws you to Ted Cruz? And the answer he gave me was, Ted Cruz seems like a Texan. Now, do I agree with that? No, I don't. But there's something that he's able to do, at least with some people in certain pockets of Texas, to make it come across as he's this Texas wearing, beard growing, cowboy boot, you know, I'm from Texas. And at least with my half of the family, who are Republicans, really resonated with them. Even though I'm not from Texas, but Ted Cruz doesn't strike me as your typical, stereotypical Texan, you know? So I don't know how he does that. It must be his campaigns, but it really does reach to the average voter, Republican voter in Texas, at least last election and the one previously.
Is your Texas family on your dad or your mom's side?
My dad's side.
Your dad's side? Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is that relevant?
I was just interested because, well, here, a little of the behind the scenes. So we do the podcast on Zoom, and Jordy put in the chat that we have that Cole's grandfather might have been old enough to be a Lincoln loyalist because GOP is the party of the 13th Amendment, right? But that's not going to be the case so much for your father's side. Because they're like he wasn't relying on the 13th Amendment for freedom, so or they weren't. Yeah,
right.
So, sorry.
No, that's okay.
Context helps.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. I mean, it's also maybe I missed this, but I mean, in terms of Cruz and his Texan-ness, I mean, I think Harvard moved to Austin, right?
Right.
They have an extension campus there. Right? Yeah.
Very Texan.
I got to do a quick cultural education moment. So in Spain, where I've spent a lot of time, where my father's from, in Spanish, que chulo is like how cool, how awesome. But it's literally pimp, how pimp, right? So like your head to toe Miami Vice is like que chulo.
Hey.
But like pimp in a cool way, right?
Yeah. Do you guys want to do the game or do you want to do the Malcolm Kenyatta video?
Let's do just briefly one short thing and then let's do the game. So
are you going to tell us the quote?
No, that's going to be after the game or after Kenyatta.
Okay.
So just very briefly, last night, the Hub for Progress, and this video is out there, partnered with something that's new called the Outrun Coalition. And Nathan, I appreciate you liking the video. I don't know if you got to see any of it.
A little bit of it.
No problem. So there'll be more about this, and maybe we'll bring some of them on. But the Outrun Coalition grew out of Paolo Kermitis and some other young people that that he and when I say young, I mean like between like 18 and 35. They were doing a lot in the rural Democratic, the New York State rural Democrat, whatever it's called. I think it's called the Democratic Rural Caucus or something, winning a lot of races, and, you know, got very frustrated with pushback from the institutionalized party. And so now they've started this to be not just New York State, but anywhere. I think it's a really interesting idea. It overlaps really well with what we're doing on barnstorming and what the Hub for Progress is doing. And there was also one reason to listen. He had on four people who have run, and one of them who stole the show, I might slaughter his last name, but it was like GC Yeverias or Leverias, who like, just, you got to watch. Like, one thing he said was, he himself is Peruvian, you know, like if you look at him, he's kind of Afro-Latino, like a little bit darker complected, had like Jesus hair and beard, beautiful man. He like joked, like, I'm the most beautiful legislator in Dutchess County, New York, where Poughkeepsie is. Anyway, he was cursing. He's like, you got to keep it real, but just so much like, you know, like energy and like, special sauce. And like, he said this one thing that was great, which was, you know, we need people to run who are people, not politicians. He said it slightly more eloquently than that, but it was one of those things that we wrote down.
This goes back to the talk that we had when John Tell was on, also John Tell mm-hmm. Toland, who's a candidate for Lancaster City Council, and he was talking about how he wants to tell his story, and like however he says it is how he's gonna say it. It's about being vulnerable. It's about showing people that whatever your life experiences are, it doesn't mean that you can't be involved in politics, because that's what turns a lot of people off. And maybe we would have more turnout if people saw themselves more in government.
Yeah. For sure.
Something I'm just going to throw in. Longtime listeners of the podcast will know that I'm slugging my way through Obama's book right now since like November. I'm just finishing up the section on the Affordable Health Care or the ACA. Obama had this very eloquent paragraph that was talking about all of these legislators that took a really hard vote for it to pass, like knowing that they would not win re-election. And he was like, people just berate politics as, you know, these horrible politicians all the time, but, you know, risking your career to do something that will like impact people and isn't exactly what you want or what you would have ended up liking to see it. But, you know, it's akin to compromise and voting for it anyway, because it's going to help a lot of people. That too is politics. And so I thought that was just a fine paragraph.
I mean, I remember when he was maybe even running, but anyway, somebody made the observation that he's probably one of the only presidents we've ever had who one of his core identities is as a writer. You know, he kept a journal, I think, for most of his life. And my memory of this is he kept it when he was in the White House, and a lot of his advisors didn't want him to because it's subpoenable, blah, blah, blah. And he refused. So I'm sure that the book, I mean, it's probably a slog because it's long, but as you said, it's probably beautifully written, isn't it?
Is anybody else reading it right now? Am I the only one?
I forgot how to read books.
I think it's more digestible than his other books. I think it's written very,
I read the first half of Audacity of Hope and I thought it was very easy to read.
Okay. It could be that I just tried to read Audacity of Hope when I was like 15 years old. And I couldn't get through it, but, I don't know. It's just, you know, I don't know.
Cool. All right. So game.
Yeah. Nathan, do you want to do it or?
It's kind of weird because the two of us have seen the things now. I feel like I skimmed it. So I don't know. My memory is like a goldfish. So I could probably play and still lose. I mean, Colin is the reigning champion for games, and Jordy is so educated, he'll definitely lose.
Oh, please, no.
I'll lose this one.
If you wouldn't mind, Nathan, I'll take a crack at it. I'm curious to see what happens here.
Okay, perfect.
So we're playing for keeps here, guys.
Really? This isn't one of those Taylor Swedish socialists we all win.
This is a real game that I came up with. And Cole is defending his title as master political trivia knowledge person. I don't know what's the title.
It's that title, because that title just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, you're you're definitely not going to win the contest for best title names.
Okay, all right. So this is about social values, and it's what Americans find morally acceptable. Morally acceptable.
Can I just lean into the likelihood that I'm going to lose this by pointing out that not only am I highly educated, I have a master's in sociology, so I should be particularly good at this.
You're screwed.
I'm yeah. So screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to give Jordy at least an hour to think about every question so he can properly overthink it.
Everybody has to take a shot when Jordy says sociological imagination.
Yeah. For most of these questions, they were first asked in 2001 and then asked again in 2017. And for some, it's a little different. The years are a little different. So it's like about trends and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So which issue had the biggest shift, and that's either positive or negative, in what people found morally acceptable? Was it gay and lesbian relations, birth control, or stem cell research?
From when to when?
2001 to 2017.
Wow.
I'm going with gay and lesbian relationships.
I mean, that's the obvious answer, so... Maybe I should go with stem cell research just so I can keep my perfect record of losing.
Okay. It is gay and lesbian relations, which is a very funny way to phrase that. That changed 23%. It's now 63% of Americans find gay and lesbian relations more acceptable.
Where's stem cell research?
Stem cell research is at 61%.
In favor.
Was it before?
It gained 9%. So what's that? 52%.
Yeah. Okay, so it was still majority. That's interesting. I just want to point out about the other one, that 37% of people think I shouldn't be in a relationship in America. So that's pretty cool. Because like even with it being at 63%, that still means that over a third of Americans think
But that's just you, because we know your track record.
I mean, I'm not even in favor of it when you phrase it that way.
I just want to point out here that 91% of people find birth control morally acceptable, which I think is actually fairly...
That's got to be giving the Catholic hierarchy some heartburn. Because yeah. I think off the top of my head.
And it didn't change that much, just plus 2% since 2001. So as of 2017, which do Americans find least morally acceptable? Is it polygamy, sex outside of marriage, or extramarital affairs? So that's polygamy, sex outside of marriage.
The Venn diagram of sex outside of marriage and extramarital affairs overlaps quite a bit. I guess they mean pre-marriage sex.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Out of wedlock.
Okay, I'm going to go first. I mean, it's got to be polygamy. Least acceptable, right?
Least acceptable.
I'm going to go with polygamy too.
I remember this one from skimming.
Okay.
So I can't do it.
All right. It is not polygamy, actually.
What?
Wow. Yeah.
People find extramarital affairs less morally acceptable.
Oh, my God. I was even a TA for a class called Sociology of the Family, which would have covered these kinds of things.
You would have been right. 10 years or 20 years ago, because polygamy for some reason jumped up a bit. It's now 17% of people find it morally acceptable, and extramarital affairs is just at 9%.
So those are the people who want they want cover for their extramarital affairs. Basically, they're like
legal, so yeah. Yeah.
I have to say that when I looked at it, you had a fun note for that one. So could you just share for the other?
So 69% of people find sex outside of marriage morally acceptable.
And 69%.
Yeah. All right. What do Americans find most morally acceptable? Is it animal fur clothing, medical testing on animals, cloning animals or cloning humans? What do they?
Did you say animal fur or animal free?
Animal fur.
Oh. Animal fur clothing. So like mink coats and stuff like that.
Medical testing. What if I inherited it? I didn't buy it.
That's not what it's asking.
That was asking. Poll. They didn't have cross tabs for
no, they didn't have add-ons. I mean, they probably did, but I don't know.
Can you read them again?
So is it animal fur clothing, medical testing on animals, cloning animals, or cloning humans?
And it was the most acceptable?
Yeah, which one has the highest moral acceptability?
Do you remember, Nathan?
No.
Okay.
Like fur gets a lot of attention from people like PETA for like throwing paint on them. So I almost want that to be my guess, but it sounds wrong. That's not my guess. Sorry. Wait, I got to think more.
I'm really stumbling over the middle two. What were they again? Cloning animals?
Cloning animals, cloning humans, and medical testing on animals.
So the most acceptable, I'm going to go with
medical testing on animals.
Cool.
I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to go with cloning animals.
It's actually the fur clothing is the most morally acceptable. 57% of Americans think that's fine.
Messed up that that's considered more morally acceptable than saving people's lives by like doing things to animals. So you can skin an animal and it's more acceptable than actually having something positive on the other side of it. Interesting.
Well, medical testing is.
What I'm learning from this is to the extent to which I'm generalizing from people I know, I do not overlap with the Real Housewives audience.
Mm. What do you guys find most morally acceptable?
Of those, medical testing.
Of medical testing, okay. Oh, it is close. It is close. 51% of people think that that's morally acceptable.
Cloning humans for me.
Is most acceptable?
Yeah, it's the only one that you can have consent for out of the four. So, I'm going to be the resident vegan here. So I don't. Yeah, like I support medical testing, but I also think a lot of it is unnecessary, especially because we have all these like ex vivo tests and all these models. Like a lot of the animals that we use for animal testing are actually not very indicative of human reactions to different drugs. So it's really just torture by a different name.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's a good point. What do you think, Cole?
Yeah, actually, Nathan, you may have changed my perspective on that in just a paragraph. That's actually a really good point. And your consent point is also, I was going to actually say medical testing as well, but gave me a lot to think about there.
Thanks. I try.
I mean, it's also...
Well, cloning humans is the least morally acceptable of these by a lot, according to those surveyed.
Sure. Okay. And a classic example of overthinking, though, I think that like, and even me, when I listened to that, I was thinking of duplicating humans, which really triggers our fears about our agency. But an actual, from what I know about cloning, which is nothing, a cloned human would be like, if you cloned me, which no one wants, it would be starting as a baby and it would grow and be its own person. So it's genetically, it's like having an identical twin. It's not a copy of you. It's a genetically. So
I would be really down for like, you can clone my kidney.
Right.
Like, that's a good idea.
That's something that we're already doing too, by the way. So, we've been growing like ears on the backs of rats, which is a little different than cloning, but it is using like our DNA to make things.
That actually is in.
Real quick, I think you guys are all tied.
I only have one. No, I have zero. Thank you. I don't remember.
No, you got. Oh, no, you do have zero. Oh. Nathan, because you got the gay lesbian relations one wrong.
Right.
Cole and Nathan are tied, I think.
Yeah. Is there another one?
I have two more. So, Jordy, this is to tie. Nathan, Cole, this is to take it away. And this is in a little bit of a different format. So just give me a range here and the closest person wins. What percentage of Americans find medically assisted suicide morally acceptable? You can guess. You have to guess. Yeah.
Is it like Price is Right? Like you can't go over?
I don't know. Maybe you. I'm not so picky.
Say it one more time. Sorry.
What percentage of Americans find medically assisted suicide morally acceptable?
No, 41%.
That's wild. I was going to say 41. That's so weird. Get out of my brain. I'm going to go lower then. I should do the annoying thing and just be like 40.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah. And then you can pick 42 and we'll get them out. Exactly. I'm going to actually do it just because strategy matters. 40.
I am going to say 60%.
Oh, almost got it to a T. It's 57%.
Oh,
Cole is good at
these. Not games. Again. Oh,
yeah.
No redemption.
So it's Cole's winning. So, and then there's one more. There's one more question, and I guess
is it worth quadruple points?
Yeah, it's worth 3 points. It's worth 3 points. So yeah. What percentage of Americans find pornography morally acceptable?
Is more than 100?
We can cut this out if you guys don't want to.
No. Is more than 100? an answer?
Right. Yeah, it's people who are traveling to the States, but they're not American citizens. It's like 115. 97%.
91. Look, we just left it wide open for Cole.
Yeah.
Oh man. I'm gonna go with 88%.
See, this is why I included this question, because it was surprising to me. 36%.
What? Liars. All of them. Show us your browser history.
Oh, it's interesting because, like, I have some cognitive dissonance on pornography, right? I'm a watcher. Oh no, I'm out of the closet now. I watch pornography, but I do have some problems with some of the practices, like how exploitive it can be, because a lot of people don't get into it because they're very sex positive and they want to do it. A lot of people do it because they don't have other things available to them. So it especially targets marginalized communities. And that's why you end up with these people who get in really crappy situations where they're basically owned by porn companies, and it's not good. So in that sense, I think it's reprehensible. But in the sense of enjoying it as an entertainment media, I don't. So.
I
think that question reveals the deep and profound hypocrisy of America more than anything else.
Yeah. It'd be like if you ask about the morality of sneakers. So where it's like, well, of course they're fine, but then it's like, oh, do you like how they're made? I don't know. There's a parallel there, I think.
Only among the foot fetishists, but okay.
Well, I you tend to see yourself in the world, so I just assume everybody has a foot fetish.
Oh, okay.
I wonder what this was like in the 70s.
The pornography? I'll bet it.
Do you think it stayed the same?
I don't know. I'm not going to say anything because the UVA is going to ask for their masters back after my performance.
Cole wins again.
I know.
Good job, Cole.
Good game, guys.
You guys out of the water.
Good man for nothing.
All right. I'm going to tell you, if we're going to do the Kenyatta, we better hop to it.
Government hasn't worked for working families like mine. I know what it's like to see an eviction notice, to work a minimum wage job. My first one was at the age of 12, working to support my family. My dad was a social worker. My mom was a home health care aide. No matter how hard they worked, they struggled to make ends meet for me and my siblings. And unfortunately, my story isn't that unique. It's familiar to Pennsylvanians all across the Commonwealth. Working families from Philly to Erie, from Scranton to Johnstown, from Bethlehem to Uniontown are resilient and leaning on one another. But Pennsylvania and America are at a crossroads. After 4 years of division and just over a month since a failed coup at the United States Capitol, second floor! We face a question of who we want to be as a country. But we also face a recognition what's been broken has been broken for more than 4 years. We have to answer the question at the heart of every campaign. Who should government work for? We need policies that actually speak to working families and lift them up. We have to choose. Are we going to go down the path of darkness? Or are we ready to bring a new day to Pennsylvania? A new day that demands we acknowledge how out of reach the American promise has been for too many of us. A new day where we confront head-on challenges in healthcare, in climate, in gun violence, in poverty. A new day where we don't just talk about justice, but we make it real in our lifetime. A new day where no matter who you are, who you love, how you worship, you get a fair shot. It's time for a new day, Pennsylvania. I'm Malcolm Kenyatta, and I'm running for the United States Senate.
What was your first take?
I felt like it was morning in America, but morning in Pennsylvania, honestly. That was my first takeaway. It seemed so bright, and it's such a contrast to the Fetterman ad, honestly. That's what sticks out to me the most initially.
I mean, can we, full disclosure, I mean, have you put your support behind one or the other yet?
I haven't put it behind any of the four that I know of, or five that I know of. Mm.
Anybody else? Cole, you're one of our other resident. Had you seen it before?
I did when he released it. I do agree with Nathan's point that it is definitely a contrast of being more hopeful and lighter. But then I believe he also didn't do something that Fetterman did in acknowledging the struggling towns and infrastructure and it in Pennsylvania. So I think it was kind of unbalanced between the two. One had one thing and then another had the other thing. Now he did talk about nationally what we've been going to. And of course he's running for US Senate. So I understand it's nationally, but I think Fetterman did a little bit better of saying, even though it was kind of like Lord Voldemort ad, like talking about what's plaguing Pennsylvania. But I'll let anyone else.
I really agree with Cole. I thought it was like a masterclass race class narrative. But it was lacking that like geographical diversity component. And it was also like a little light on policy in general too. Like, I don't really know what he wants to do, you know, like I do get the sense of the vision that he has. That's just my.
To orient this a little bit, is that a criticism that's comparing or contrasting with the Fetterman ad, or is that just a criticism of this ad on its own? Do you think that the Fetterman ad did a better job of advancing some policy agenda?
I don't remember if he talked about it at all, if the Fetterman ad did do policy. I don't know. Maybe that's an unfair criticism.
The other thing that I have for this, just real quick, I think that when you're proposing solutions, you're implying problems. So I think it's kind of easy to say that when he's talking about some of the things that need to change or that he would want to change, that it's like, oh, that's just hopeful. But really, it is talking about the issue. It's just not forefronting the part that's bad. It's forefronting our ability to overcome things. Now it really sounds like I am in his camp, but really, I'm not shilling. I'm just chilling.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Go ahead,
and,
Jordy.
And Jordy, I'm sorry. I'll let you go. Just one other quick thing. And maybe I missed it, but I didn't see anywhere him talk about that he is a state rep in the ad. Mm-hmm. So I think that now it's of my opinion that I don't think the strongest person we can put up is a two-term state rep. That's just my personal opinion. However, that is his qualification, at least his argument for, you know, an elected qualification to move up to the U.S. Senate. And he didn't mention it. So if I showed that to one of my friends, I feel like one of their first questions would be, is this guy just, you know, walking out of a barbershop and wanting to run for U.S. Senate? I mean, he had a scene where he's walking up the steps of the Capitol, but I mean, everyone does that in, you know, in, especially in like South Central PA. So, if I could give the ad a grade, I'm going to be honest, I'd give it like a C+.
I would give it more like a B+. I think it was, yeah, I don't know. Nathan, like I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot more than the Fetterman ad.
Do you want to jump in the grading queue?
Oh, I'll give it just a B, a solid B.
So I've only seen the Fetterman ad once, and I've now only seen that Kenyatta ad once. And it was really interesting to hear y'all talk about it because here's a couple of I'll just throw out a couple of points. One, I could have sworn that either one was made from outtakes of the other, just the visuals, because to me it was a mix of gritty post-industrial Pennsylvania towns, rural landscape, some rivers, some more urban scenes. Kind of along those lines, to me, they like my memory of them, and I couldn't swear that either that Fetterman's did more with policy, is mostly a like biography brand kind of ad, like this is who I am. And so going with what I was saying about very similar imagery, the difference to me was a lot the music. maybe the faces of people. Like I can't remember if Fetterman sort of showed that sort of like grim fortitude working class person. You know, Kenyatta's had him look like at a food bank or something, like working in the community. I think there was a hug or two. I really liked all of the COVID stuff. Like I feel like that worked to show what was important. And weirdly, I don't even know if I should say this, the very opening thing where he's being embraced by, I assume, his husband or spouse or whatever. I'm saying whatever because I don't know their legal status. I know that he's out. And I was a little bit like, oh, he's out. Like it was just, I guess it was just one of those moments of like kind of going with our morals quiz. Like it's cool that that's totally normalized, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like it was just a beat that I noticed because I've like spent most of my lifetime, of course, being acculturated to that's not normal or acceptable or whatever.
Yeah.
So
what's your grade? You're dancing around it.
Well, I've given a lot of grades in my life and I think that grading is overrated.
Yeah. He'll get back to you in a few months.
I think it's a B also.
Okay.
And I think I'm such a charitable grader that like I gave it a solid B, but even for the Fetterman one, which I had a lot of issues with, I give it like a B -. So like they're very normal for me.
I would too.
I'm gonna bring up something I said about Fetterman's, which I like as a hunch even more now, which was I think if we were to guess the target audience behind the ad maker, it's interesting. I think the target audience for Fetterman was blue money, big pockets of blue money, because you know, he had Colbert, you know, his interview with Colbert, which is going to, you know, like please them. And he talked about like the white Trump voter and how he could win them. And I think Kenyatta's audience was the broad progressive base, right? I think, you know, Fetterman was first out, first mover advantage. And I think that Kenyatta with this ad is trying to say, like, I worked a minimum wage job. Fetterman didn't when he was 12. You know, Kenyatta, I guess, really is from Philly. And you know, Fetterman's a little bit vulnerable. And also I'm not shilling for anyone. I honestly, from the little bit I know about both, I know more about Fetterman. I think they're both tremendously gifted politicians. I really respect what Kenyatta did in the legislature last session. I think the qualification thing is we could do a whole podcast on that, you know, and I know Cole knows I'm not throwing any shade, but the way that can be used and not used because of youth and or race, you know, I don't care that much. Like, I think some voters care a lot about qualification. I don't know if anything qualifies you more for that kind of a race, Senate, governor, president, than running, right? I think that's probably one of the things that qualifies you most. And so if you run well, you'll probably do a good job.
Right. Well, let me be clear. I also don't, not that I don't care, but I'm not going to look at someone and say, oh, you know, you
disqualify.
Yeah. Yes. However, especially from a candidate's point of view and someone who, you know, ran and when talking to people on the doors telling you, oh, you're not qualified enough to do so and so, that is in a lot of people's psyche. So I just think electorally, we have to take that into account. And let me bring up a topic. I'd love to hear all y'all's opinion on this. I had someone tell me, you know, when this ad came out, text me and say, Kenyatta is trying to brand himself as the progressive from the progressive wing of the party. But this is also someone in the primary, not in the general, because in the general we all did, but in the primary, who stumped for Biden a lot. I mean, a lot. So do you guys see that as kind of a, when we had a field of candidates, of like 18 candidates, and excuse me, many from the progressive wing of the party, you know, he chose to go with one of our more centrist candidates. Do you guys see that as, I'm not giving my opinion on it, I'm just throwing out the question, as kind of weird or hypocritical, or what are your thoughts?
I so want to, can I go first? Mm-hmm. I love this. I love that you raised it, Cole. I didn't know that. I don't give a fuck personally, but I also totally hear what you're saying, that it matters for people. And the reason I say I don't give a fuck is because the left that I want, I've said this before, the left that I want organizes people and fights ideas, not the other way around. By which I mean, I know that it's important to have people who are strong on issues. This even goes to something we were saying earlier, but like, I know that politics is an art, and sometimes compromise is a stance, or it's a heroic stance. And so what I'm getting at is like, okay, so Fetterman, you know, agreed to a deal when he was the mayor of Braddock that brought a plant that uses natural gas. And now he says he's against pipelines. I buy that. And so Malcolm thought Biden was the best choice. That, you know, that to me has nothing to do with whether or not fundamentally he's going to be an advocate for the things we care about. And this kind of like litmus test thing that I feel like people on the left do about their candidates, it really drives me up a wall.
So I give a fuck. So I'm taking the alternative point of view, where I just say, the same way that personnel is policy to a degree, I think that the people you choose to endorse also says something about your policy, because you're trying to advance a vision. I think that generally I do devalue it, but that's just on a practical matter, because I know from being inside campaigns that a lot of other factors inform who you end up endorsing, who you end up stumping for, things like that. So it doesn't necessarily mean that that's who you're most aligned with policy-wise. And is that crude? Is that maybe like the worst part of politics? Probably, but it also just is a reality of people who are in elected office, people who go out and campaign. So I devalue it, but I also think that it does matter, and it is going to matter to people.
I'll answer this and then I want to hear your opinion about this, Cole. And then I think we should move on, because Nathan has to go soon. I think that it makes me, and I say this as somebody who used to work for Bernie Sanders, I think it actually makes me like, perhaps like take a second look at him in a good way, because he knows, like, unlike, I don't know. I know now that he's not an ideologue, and that he has a really good beat on what the Democratic electorate is, and made the decision that wasn't very popular. But he made the right decision, you know? And, I don't know. It makes me think that, he's a shrewd politician.
And it's the right decision by dint of Biden winning the primary.
Biden won the primary and won the general. So Okay. Nobody else can say that.
Right. Yeah. I would say honestly, with Mal, and this is why, you know, I haven't jumped in with anyone in this U.S. Senate race. You know, I used to be a huge Fetterman supporter. I was on his campaign for LT, Gov, and then for his first U.S. Senate run. But I'm still holding back in this race, because I think time will tell. We still have a long way to go until the U.S. Senate race. So I'm interested to see Malcolm kind of flesh out his campaign, because if he starts talking about stuff that, you know, that shit that really is raw and deep and like is really pertaining to Pennsylvania, I mean, I think that has to be our candidate going up in the general election, or if Fetterman does it as well, because, you know, the Republicans are going to put up like some, Doug Mastriano, fuck, who, excuse my language, I just can't stand him, who is going to be from the far right fringes of the party. And we need someone who's going to, not necessarily from the far left fringes of our party, but someone who's going to really speak to everyday Pennsylvania. So I'm just, what time will tell, and they'll definitely flesh out their campaigns.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably
my language. I just hate Doug Mastriano. I just can't.
Oh, you don't know. We spent a whole episode calling him
multiple
Rambo.
Doug Mastriano is a longtime enemy of the pod.
Yeah. Jordy, who's the quote from?
Yeah, so you guys are going to love this. Do you want me to reread it, or have you got it still in your...
I got enough of it, I think.
Yeah. So it's Octavia Butler.
Oh.
And if you don't know, Octavia Butler is a pioneering African-American...
Sci-fi writer.
I was about to say, I'm not sure about her sexual orientation. As somebody who's a big sci-fi fan... I'm actually a little bit sheepish that I never read her, and I'm looking forward to going back. And this is the 15th anniversary this week of her death. And Democracy Now! Has an interview they've released, and that's a quote. The quote is one of her characters in one of her novels. So what do you guys think? I'm blown away by who you guessed.
I'm
just going to say my guess of Ted Cruz was not serious.
Mine was also not real, of course, but...
Wait, you guys you're retconning me.
Yeah, that was, wow. That was...
Choose your leaders with wisdom and forethought. To be led by a coward is to be controlled by all that the coward fears. To be led by a fool is to be led by the opportunist who control the fool. To be led by a thief is to offer up your most precious treasures to be stolen. To be led by a liar is to ask to be lied to. To be led by a tyrant is to sell yourself and those you love to slavery.
To be honest, I'm getting the Great Dictator vibes, like the Charlie Chaplin movie, right? Like that's the speech at the end. It rhymes with it philosophically.
I mean, yeah. I'll defend you guys that I could see. You said tried to make Cruz and Trump one person. Cruz, Crumpet. Cruz and Trump were your two get. Was that right?
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, Trump would never say anything so eloquent. So like maybe Stephen Miller would have written it for him or Steve Bannon.
Yeah. I think they were all sarcastic guesses, but yeah.
Were they really, or are you retconning?
They really were. No, like
I was sarcastic.
Yeah. Cause you also said on Twitter, like that made it like very clearly like /S for me, where it was like, that's heavy on the sarcasm. And mine, I know Trump doesn't know half of those words, let alone would use them.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, I will say, okay, so I obviously can't read sarcasm, or you guys have pulled a massive retcon on me, but,
gaslighting.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is the case that all of these things are in the wheelhouse of what right-wing populists say in America. They just don't mean it. Mm-hmm. So no surprise there. So yeah. So that's the Octavia Butler moment. We're going to wrap up here. I actually wanted to say one more thing. So also, I have this book. I don't know if people have heard of it, Emergent Strategy. It's been recommended to me a couple of times by Adrienne Marie Brown, who's an African-American woman the book is actually very influenced by the way Octavia Butler, kind of her world building. I know that the book, maybe I'll just read it real quick from the back. Inspired by Octavia Butler's explorations of our human relationship to change, Emergent Strategy is radical self-help, society help, and planet help change designed to shape the futures we want to live. Change is constant. The world is in continual state of flux. It is a stream of ever-mutating emergent patterns. Rather than steel ourselves against such change, this book invites us to feel, map, assess, and learn from swirling patterns around us in order to better understand and influence them as they happen. So, like part of me is like, that's how I already think about the world. So when somebody suggested I look at the book, I was like, well, but that's kind of already how I think about it. But I'm sort of newly reinterested in it because of the Octavia Butler connection. I wish I had done a slightly better job of telling you who, Adrienne Marie Brown is a social justice facilitator, healer, and a doula living in Detroit. So that's a little bit of the tie-in, and maybe we can get another sponsor out of that.
Cool.
That can be for the book club. I love I love sci-fi though as a vehicle for progress, just because like historically and even today, it really is just at the forefront of social justice. You see things in Star Trek that are normalized decades later, and it's such a powerful vehicle for progress. And I love that that quote came from her. That's so great. And I love that there's a book that's basically a guidebook that uses sci-fi right. as a roadmap for it. That's so great. And it speaks to something else that the Hub has facilitated, which is the Black Lives Matter allies and the Hub. They have their roundtable every other Thursday, and on the last one we focused on art, and I just think that this is like we were focused on public art, specifically murals and statuary, but this idea that like narratives can feed into the real world and we can have like the real world imitate art is such a good idea, and I just I like the whole concept and I want the book now.
Wow, yeah. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Last words, Cole? We'll let you take us out.
No, I really appreciate you guys having me on again. I really do. And I want to keep coming on. I love discussing stuff with you guys.
Yeah,
I'll just run topics.
We'll watch you back. I'm going to come up with some of the other 80s shows I want you to dress in that style.
Well, you got to tell us next time. So, because I mean, you know, I don't have exactly Miami Vice costumes, but
I'm thinking some more than Mindy. I want to see him in Robin Williams' weird red jumpsuit.
Well, this is going to be my promise to you guys because I have a lot of outlandish like clothing. Every time I come on the podcast, I'll be wearing something different. That is just like, whoa, like my gosh, Cole, what are you doing? But yeah, that's my promise.
Can you tell us in what area you have the least knowledge, Cole, just so that we know what the next game should be about?
Yes. Thank you, Nathan.
Well, you and I can touch base privately about this if you want something.
It's luck. It's just luck. It really is just luck.
Do you know a lot about soccer?
I actually play semi-pro soccer.
Correct. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot about the U.S. men's national team, so I was going
to... Me too. I think, we got to connect on that.
Oh, my God. It's like the golden age of players in Europe.
Beachland, Will Penn, Tunnelton, Conestoga, Bakerton, Curry Run, Smoke Run, Sanatoga, Slickville, Smithville, Flicksville, Max Tony, Youngwood, Edgewood, Hopwood, Punks, Tony, Whitehall, Blue Ball, Center Hall, North Apollo, Delano, Renovo, Laredo, let's go. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley, spare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Stump Creek, Pence Creek, Pine Creek, Chambersburg, Middle Creek, Blakesley, Falls Creek, Shepherdsburg, Johnstown, Allentown, Shepherdstown, Lords Valley, Daisytown, Doylestown, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Grove, Swiss Vale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela, oh well. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley, spare man. I beat the mountain, air man. Travel, I've had my share, man.